Good morning, members. The audio has started and we get to start. I appreciate members from both sides coming this morning because it was a late night for everyone and probably hard to get up this morning, but important. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Would you like to start us off?
Madam Chair, members, I want to start off this hearing just to say a couple words and let you know how we are going to be progressing on some things. Some allegations have been made and some investigations that are ongoing inside the department and how they are going to affect some of the things that you're going to want to talk about today.
Commissioner, could you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Mark Wolfson, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. We've got a number of people here today to try to answer some of the questions for you. Assistant Commissioner Larry Krampa, when the allegations were made late last week, asked Larry to start to try to put together some of the preliminary numbers and try to start the beginning of the dissection of what was brought forward in the Star Tribune article last week. Denise Anderson, our business office person, you're familiar with, and as we get into some of the other members, other employees, to help answer your questions. Let me start by saying this. The allegations that have been made are very serious, and it's one that we at the Department of Natural Resources are not taking lightly. The consequences of some of the allegations have begun investigations. So as we talk today, you're going to experience probably some frustration with us as we're just not able to go into some of the things that you're going to want to talk about. Specifically, as we lay out and look at the allegation, there are three main areas that are going to want to be talked about. You're going to want to talk about and understand the financing of the conference and our involvement and interaction in that. And we will try to provide you the numbers that we have in the last several days been able to put together and demonstrate those. But understand, we're trying to put a paper trail together of 200 some odd employees over a 2-year period of time. That takes a lot more detail. So these are the numbers that we have today, will be the best numbers that we can generate. And we have no reason to believe that they're off significantly, but we're going to be doing more in the area, in the background arena of the financing of the event and our relationship with it. There are specific allegations related to 43A, which is conflict of interest statements, conflict of interest statutes. We are in the midst of investigations on that and in that arena. We have had contact and conversations with the legislative auditor. We are working collaboratively and cooperatively with that office. I believe we have the first packet of information being sent over there today to begin that process. So we are in a very open door policy and trying to work as openly and collaboratively with them. We have also contacted the Department of Employee Relations and looking to contract with an external firm on our own side to do our own due diligence. And we feel just because of the size and the scope that this has the potential, and I need to stress that again, the potential for this to step out into, we want to make sure we have a full vetting. And so we're asking an outside entity to come in and be our contract for that purposes. So the third activity as a result of this also gets us into the issue of data practices and data privacy issues. We have an internal investigation that has begun as a result of some of the accusations made or inquiries that have been made. And so that those activities have already begun inside the agency. So I want to stress to you that we want to be as open, as transparent. We want to answer your questions as thoroughly as we possibly can. But due to the severity of the consequences that are laid out in statute, due to the severity of the allegations made, as we need to be extremely careful and cautious with how we proceed in the answering of your questions today. Over time, as we are able to, we will provide this committee and members with as much detail as we possibly can, or as much detail as you need to, until you feel satisfied with our activities with this. Madam Chair, I don't know if there's any...
Let me clarify one of the, or ask a question that hopefully will clarify one of the things you just said. When you talk about data privacy, the Star Tribune requested data under our law.
Yes.
Did the paper get all of the data that it requested?
Madam Chair, we provided the Star Tribune with volumes of data. An inquiry came in late last week suggesting that they may not have gotten all the data. That, as we began to, it immediately, looking at the players involved, began an investigation. I can't tell you today whether or not all that has happened or not, whether they've got all the information that they asked for. That's what the investigation is entailing. Did they get the data? Did they get the information that they were supposed to get? And who's involved?
Okay. And when we say supposed to get, that you are required to give them under law.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Data that we... I think I can go here. It is... there's the department data. There is other entities' data that we may have been in possession of. If we were in possession of it, we are required by law to provide that also as data. And that is the subject of what we're looking at.
Thank you.
Well, Commissioner, will there be... can you tell us anything today?
Madam Chair, we can provide you with accounting of the event and the activities from the beginning when the convention was first being brought here. We can lay out as much data as we have been able to piece together here in the last couple of days. So we have some accounting, and we think we've got a lot of data that we can share with you in what we know.
Okay, that would be great.
But we just, again, I just want to stress, we want to be cautious in how we move forward. And with the questions that will potentially come as a result, we have to be careful.
Commissioner, the fact that you're looking for a paper trail over a two-year period of time, and that we need to do some accounting at this point, and that our analysts who look at your numbers could not obviously see the money spent for this conference. This is troubling at the beginning. So this should have been all clear and transparent to the public. And that's one of the beginning issues that we all have.
And Madam Chair, I think when we get into the discussion of the conference, and the relationship between the department and the peace officer, the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association, and the costs that were for the training and education of our officers, we think we've got enough data to satisfy your today's questions. I hope we do. And then be able to move forward. Again, I want to stress that. We will answer all of your questions in time. We will get them. Anywhere else you want to go?
Members, are there questions before we hear from... I assume that Mr. Meyer is not going to be here, that we're going to go straight to Mr. Samsa.
We'll be
here, but he's not on the witness
list. Well, he is. He's on our hearing list, but I'm assuming that...
We had no particular order in...
Okay, that's what we... You know, we're not... We're just looking at the list we have here.
I don't want that one.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Larry Cramp. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Operations. I happen to have the Division of Enforcement that reports to me. And I'm going to ask Denise Anderson, our Chief Financial Officer, to present the numbers that we are able to give you today and kind of walk through what those are. And then we'll take questions as you would ask us to.
Ms. Anderson, good morning, Madam Chair of the Members. My name is Denise Anderson, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Natural Resources. And the pages have a handout for you right now that shows you, based on what we know as of today, our accounting of costs for this conference. So I think I'll wait for a minute for that to get handed out. Okay. All right, so the accounting for the cost starts back in July of 2005 when we had several conservation officers that attended the 2005 conference. And at that conference, they did receive training and also placed a bid out to host the 2007 conference here in the state of Minnesota. At that point in time, the bid was accepted and approved by the conference. In 2006, members attended the conference again and received credits for training as well as began the planning for the 2007 conference that was held here.
Ms. Anderson, if you don't mind, I'm going to jump in if you don't mind
okay.
going through this chronology, because the first thing you said just raised a question for me. You said that in 2005 a bid was put in for the conference. What does that mean? Does that mean literally we have to bid for it with, you know, money? Or you're just talking about, you know, making a pitch for Minnesota?
Making a pitch, ma'am, yeah.
Okay, so this was just to send people there to the conference in 2005 to talk about
Minnesota
hosting it in the next time period. Okay, thank you.
And again, the training. They did receive training while they were there as a part of the conference.
And Ms. Anderson, I'm sorry, the four of you, the attendees are all in the enforcement division.
Madam Chair, could I ask
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Anderson, what type of training? Could you give just a little specifics on the type of training? Is it training that's not available locally?
The Madam Chair's members, the conservation officers are required to have a certain number of post-licensure training. And so this was a way for them to get some of their credit hours. I don't know the specifics of the type of training that's required.
This would be a good time to tell us how many hours of training on average that they are supposed to get each year.
Madam Chair, members, the post-licensure requirements at this time, Peace Officer Standards and Training Board licensure requirements are 48 hours in a three-year period. However, I think it's also important to note that agencies have a responsibility to train their employees outside of that as well. So the average, you know, peace officer in any organization that I've been aware of is probably going to exceed that in any given year, just because you have specific needs that you're going to train your officers on. The NOEA conference that they went to in 2005, it would have been an additional benefit for them to go there to get some of that training. They were there also to present that offer to have the conference here.
Okay. And Mr. Kranta, do you know what that consists of to make an offer to host it? Do you have to offer some kind of financial support or participation?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that this was literally a presentation, and that would have been the extent of it. So the presentation of, you know, the city that you're going to host it at, what you offer, those kinds of things.
Representative Hansen, I think Representative Wagenius and I are just going to sort of tag team it. I know it's a little informal, but it's sort of easier, and we're all tired. So we'll just jump in. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner. As you know, I used to be a state employee. I supervised folks. I went to conferences, and I had to write a lot of justifications to do that. And whenever there was even an in-state conference, you needed to write a justification, an out-of-state travel request that went up a chain of command, had to be signed and approved. And there were periods of time where even there were out-of-state travel bans. And so one of my questions was, I can't remember, because I left state employment before this, if there was still an out-of-state travel ban in place in 05.
Commissioner members, I don't believe that there was a ban in place at that time. This would have gone through an out-of-state travel request, just as you described, and go through that approval process. So,
and so there was a, Madam Chair, so there should be a paper trail here of those forms with the authorization by the immediate supervisor, and I think ours always had to go up to the commissioner's office. So these out-of-state travel requests go up into the commissioner's office, and were they approved there?
Madam Chair, members, that would be correct, that there would be a signed form with that chain of custody on it. I didn't bring that today.
And, Madam Chair, and then I think part of those forms was to say the benefit or the value of the conference to the state, and some of the ones I went through had training in them. But then I also had to write what I did, you know, when I came back, or what I was doing when I was there. Was there anything like that, or was there a paper requirement saying, you know, this was valuable, or this wasn't, or this is some contact I made, or I learned about these grants there? Is there any post conference evaluation or requirement that was done after these trips? And I guess that's the question.
Mr. Kranta?
Madam Chair, members, at the moment, I am not able to say that I have seen that. So I can't verify whether or not it exists. What I can do is ask Colonel Hamm to come up in a few minutes, and we can find out if some of that information is there as well, or we can bring him up now too, if that's your wish. The agencies do have some differences, as you know, Representative Hansen, on the differences of what is required for the post-conference follow-up. So whether or not it looks like what you're describing, I can't say, because I don't know what that agency does. So,
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did anyone, any employee, go to that conference just simply to put in the bid for hosting here? Or were they already there as a to attend the conference?
Madam Chair, and members, I think that's something that I probably am going to need to have Colonel Hamm speak to. That was prior to my tenure as an assistant commissioner, so it's probably going to be better if he answers that question.
We'll hold that.
I'm still looking for information about someone at the agency must have made an agreement with the conference organizers about hosting it, and you know what the conditions were, and I'm wondering Can you tell us who negotiated that and who sort of led that discussion for on behalf of the DNR with this,
Madam Chair, members, I think there's a distinction that we also need to bring into play here, and that is that the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association was actually the entity that originally decided that this was something that they would like to pursue. MCOA then contacted the department to, you know, request our assistance as well in making that bid or pitch to the NOAA folks. So we did not decide to do this just solely as an agency. MCOA is also involved in kind of making that request.
Making, Mr. Crafton, making the request, you mean making the pitch to host the conference?
Correct.
So MCOA is the union, the Minnesota Correctional Officers Association?
Madam Chair, the MCOA is the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association. The actual bargaining unit and union is the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, I believe, MLEA.
So they were involved in making this pitch when you, I mean, at the 2005 conference is where we pretty much made our pitch for Minnesota. So MCOA, did they pay any of the cost of this travel, or was it just the DNR that paid that cost, you know?
The portion that's listed here, Madam Chair, is the portion that the DNR paid. I don't know if MCO paid in addition to that.
Representative Cornyn?
I could give you, I think, a lot of clarity as far as background. I used to be the president of the MCOA, and I was the one that made a decision whether to send these folks down there. This has been going on for years and years and years, I think 10 or 15 years. It's the North American Wildlife Enforcement Association.
Start what you said again. I didn't hear it literally.
The MCOA.
So you were what? Just start right from the beginning. I just didn't hear what you said.
What they're talking about here is the North American Wildlife Enforcement Association, NOAA. And the conference that conservation officers go to are usually paid actually by the union. The union would pick two representatives or three and pay for them, and it might have been shared, but we put out a lot of money, just union money, and we send these people down to this conference for the last 10 or 15 years. We've been trying to land this conference like a crown jewel for years because the conference comes to whatever state or country, maybe even Canada, I can't remember, but they, it's a lot of good training, the combat shoot, self-defense training, wildlife training, everything, management. And so at the same time, hundreds of officers come. It's quite a ceremony. They're in uniform. So we would send these people down, and they were required to come back and make a report. Every time they would go down, they were required to come to the convention, the MCOA, to give a full detailed report on what happened. And then we would have been trying to land this for years, this conference that eventually ended up here. So,
Representative Cornyn, for those who don't know your background, when you say we?
Well, I was a conservation officer for 22 years, and I was president of this union for three terms, and I was responsible for sending these people back and forth to this conference.
So was it your...
Not during this time. But that's why I started out by saying some background would help.
Yeah. And then when you, Representative Cornyn, just, you know, during your time, tenure there and your experience, was it did the union and the state agency share the cost of sending COs to this conference and getting their training?
I believe so. I think it was kind of a joint venture. We would pay for our representatives. They might send one from management, and then we would pick two, and we would pay for those. And they would go down together as a joint effort, labor management, and attend the conference. And the hotel part of it, 20 years ago, when I was the first conservation officer, 22, my first training was in a big hotel, all of us, one day or 2 days or something. So this isn't an anomaly. This has been going on for events. My first training session was in a big hotel, and all the officers get together in these huge rooms, defensive training, red suit training, you know, the normal training you go through.
And how many officers would usually go from Minnesota to an out-of-state one of these out-of-state annual conferences?
Oh, this NAWIA conference?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, a three would go. Like, we'd send two and maybe management would send one.
So it wasn't the whole cadre of all...
Oh, I'm sorry. This, when it was another state, right.
When it was in another state.
You could only afford to send, you know, so many. When we hosted it ourselves, then I think, and you can verify this to the agency, but that's when everybody came down because it was training. We were required to have 48 hours of training for 3 years, and then there's a lot of mandated training. If it doesn't happen, the chief law enforcement officer, the CELEO, can get in a lot of trouble if the mandated training doesn't happen on time that he has to answer for.
Well, Representative Wagenius and I are both facing a June deadline for our continuing legal education credits, so we know what you're talking about, but we have to pay for those ourselves. Keep our law licenses current. Senator Sackpot.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the thing that I keep looking at when I'm reading this Star article, Star Tribune article, and, you know, we've all been to conferences, as you say, in-state, out-state, and private and public, and it gets down to this one statement here, which is, far fewer people than expected came for the 3 days of training and entertainment. Well, I've been the head of some good conferences, and when a lot of people show up, you do well. And if they kind of bomb, and you do all this work, and nobody shows up, they can be pretty expensive. And so, in the testimony here, I think that's one of the things I kind of like to hear.
Maybe we should proceed a little bit down the list.
Representative Hanson had one more question, and then we will let Ms. Anderson keep moving forward. Representative Hanson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Ms. Anderson can answer this. I just want to know what the source of the funds were. You know, and again, back my experience, we had to do half-hour increment cost coding on timesheets based to sources, and so, you know, whether it was general fund or whether, I used to code, if I was doing something that was with a monitoring program, it would be a monitoring general fund, and if I was doing something with the pesticide regulatory account, it would be pesticide regulatory account on my timesheet. And so with these dollars, are they general fund dollars or game and fish fund dollars or federal dollars? I mean, do you have the ability to sort that out, or do you know the answer to that?
Ms. Anderson. Madam Chair, members, I know that some of the money came from the general fund and some of the money came from the game and fish fund. At this point in time, I don't know the split between those, especially in the things that happened in the previous fiscal year. We're still pulling that information.
Why don't you continue down this sheet?
Okay. And Ms. Anderson, just one more question on the 7420 number for the out-of-state travel. Was that just actual travel expenses and, you know, airfare, registration, lodging, that sort of thing? Or does that include any, do people get paid for the time they're there as well?
This would just be, Madam Chair, their travel, lodging, registration costs that were authorized. It would not include their time.
So I assume they'd be on the payroll. They'd just be clocking their regular salary during that time?
Yes. And they're supposed to be coding it as training, and those are pieces we're trying to figure out as well.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Anderson.
Okay. Then there were two winter meetings that were attended by one officer each, and those were some planning meetings for the 2007 conference. Then moving down into the cost of the conference from last year, we had total lodging costs of a little over $61,000, and it's broken down by workers, which there were some conservation officers that attended that provided training at the conference, and then we had some staff, non-licensed DNR staff that worked at the conference, and also some volunteers, and then the officers that attended and only received training are listed as officers with a total of $26,125. That's split.
Is that their salary? What are you?
Again, this is just their travel and lodging, meals, and parking.
What about salary?
That piece we're still working on.
So this does not include the salary for any of this. So this sheet is expenses, but not salary.
Correct. And do you know how many officers? You said you list workers, and then you list officers. Do you know how many staff in each of those categories? Not in those categories. I know that 204 conservation officers attended, and we had 40 non-licensed staff and 60 volunteers.
Do you want to repeat those figures again?
Madam Chair, we had 204 conservation officers, 40 non-licensed staff, and 60 volunteers.
Who made the decision to have every officer? I think that is every officer. Who made the decision to have every officer go to this conference?
Madam Chair, that would have been Colonel Hamm, and that certainly is something that is not unusual either. There are mandatory all-staff trainings that would be part of their normal activity as a division.
When you say that's normal, if you have all of your conservation officers in St. Paul in a weekend in the summertime, and we don't know the number of days yet, at least over a long weekend, at the height of our recreation season, who was there to protect the citizens, and who was out protecting the natural resources?
Madam Chair, I would suggest that might be a question that Colonel Hamm can speak to better. I would also suggest that remember that our officers are on the job and job ready whenever they go anywhere. They have their office, in a sense, in their vehicle, and they are ready to respond to things at any time. But
I mean, I love St. Paul, but it does not have the lakes and rivers and natural resources all together.
Not all of them.
The message I'm getting is, or at least the message that I think you're sending is, that it's not important that the officers are out in the ground, out doing the job in the summertime on the weekend at the height of the recreation season.
Madam Chair, if that is the suggestion that you think I'm making, that wouldn't be accurate. What I am suggesting is that the division would have had a plan and would have talked about how they are doing all of their responsibilities throughout that time period. And as I said, I think that Colonel Hamm could probably speak to that better than I can.
We'll ask that question.
Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Anderson. Moving on to the back side then, we have an accounting of the meals that were provided. In total, that was $11,355. There were some printing costs, approximately $5,135, and then some miscellaneous costs for parking, communications. The cost for registering the attendees to the DNR for DNR employees was $64,100. And then there was a grant provided to the NOEA group of $35,500. And then in fiscal year 07, there was a website that the DNR developed that provided information and a link to online registration.
Ms. Anderson, what was the grant for, and where did that money come from?
The grant was to assist in covering a portion of the normal cost of the conference. So it was for space rental, some coffee, and audiovisual services.
One of the pieces of information I would really like is a comparison of how much the department spends on CO training in other years compared to 2007 costs that we see here in front of us.
One of the things that the Star Tribune reported was that there was no line item in the budget, in the DNR budget for this event. Is that true? Yes?
Yes.
You know, our Minnesota Constitution requires that state taxes be collected only for public purposes. And then we have a statute, 16A.339, that says it is illegal to use monies appropriated by law or fees collected for any other purpose than the purpose for which the monies have been appropriated.
Madam Chair, there wasn't a specific line item in the budget for this conference. There was line item funding for employee development.
At what number?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I'm going off of my experience. And on a grant, was there? I think there had to be special expense forms for a grant, because you get into a large number like this. It seems like there was a contract. Would that be a contract, or I seem to remember things like over $2,000, or I mean, there should be a paper trail on this grant, a special expense for the reasons for the grant, a chain of command of signatures approving the grant. Does that exist?
Madam Chair, members, yes, it's an actual grant agreement. It's a contract with
contract
the state to get specific deliverables from the conference, and that was given to the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association for those services. The grant was, it was a reimbursable grant, so they had to provide documentation of providing those things that were outlined in that agreement. And yes, we do have that information and can provide that to you.
Mr. Crassett, what do you mean it was a reimbursable grant?
Madam Chair, members, reimbursable means that the services had to be provided, paid for, and then the documentation of that and of those expenditures had to be delivered to us for that grant agreement to be actually paid out. And there is a full accounting of the receipts and everything that is there for that grant.
And again, do you know who made the agreement with NOAA to give that grant from CNR to this national organization?
Madam Chair, the grant agreement was with the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association, who was the local sponsor for the event. And that would have come through the Division of Enforcement. And that grant would have been signed in the commissioner's office, in this case, by myself.
And so the grant agreement was the agreement was to give the grant directly to MCOA? It didn't go to NOAA, it went to MCOA?
Madam Chair, members, that would be correct. It is MCOA, in this case, was providing a lot of the local coordination for the NOAA Association, so the grant was to them.
But then when you said it was reimbursable, you mean that MCOA paid for all the expenses and then were reimbursed for this grant?
Madam Chair, yes, that would be correct. The MCOA would have had to show proof of those bills and payments.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, Senator Federici. Madam Chair, Ms. Anderson, or Mr. Crankup, could you tell us what other states have paid for previous conferences? Is that information available? In other words, is what Minnesota ended up paying for the conference out of line with what other states have paid?
Madam Chair, members, I believe that information would likely be available through the NOAA Association. I know that there are, I have seen some reports from previous conferences, and my guess is some of that accounting is in there. We can certainly, you know, provide that if that's readily available,
if it is
available.
That would help us in evaluating what the conference ended up costing in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. And I wonder, again, this goes to the issue of whether this was a large amount to spend on yearly training for COs or whether, I mean, I assume this is a lot more than you would spend in a normal year for your training programs for COs. But I don't know that. And I wonder, you know, how would you budget that additional amount in 2007? I mean, it was never presented to us as a request for an appropriation. So I'm just wondering where that additional money would have come from. Madam Chair, I believe that there was some funding available in the budget, and then there was some potential salary savings that covered the difference.
Elaborate on that, please.
If they had vacant positions, that funding, I guess I shouldn't be speaking if I don't know for sure. I'm assuming that's where the additional funds came from.
Madam Chair, members, I think that's part of the trail, clearly, that we don't have all of the documentation here today for you. We can provide that, and we will do that.
All right, if there's no other questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Gardner.
Sorry, I came in late. We're all a little sleep deprived. Mr. Cramp, I'm just trying to go through all the paper we have here to put stuff together. And I'm just curious if there was a point at which conference organizers for this North American conference might have pointed out to the host committee or the state agency that, you know, the host committee was not getting it together in time in order to make it a viable conference, and whether that sort of triggered a series of actions that led to things like requiring people to attend the conference or for COs to do fundraising, that sort of thing.
Madam Chair, members, I think that's something that Colonel Hamm would have to speak to. I would, again, suggest, though, that it is not unusual for, in any given year, the Enforcement Division to require all officers to attend something for training purposes. I would also just, remind the committee that as a national event, the quality and level of training and the speakers that were able to come to this event as compared to something that you might do, for instance, at the local fire hall, is a little different, and you do have a higher quality training component to this conference. All that said, I think to the other part of your question, Representative Hansen, that I'd ask Colonel Hamm to come down to speak to that.
Mr. Cramp, you've brought up the issue of the training at the conference, and I wonder if you're familiar with some of the specifics of the conference. I assume you were there, probably. Do you know how many days the conference lasted, and what portion of that time period was for actual training?
Madam Chair and members, I believe the we do have a copy of the actual brochure here. I don't have it in front of me, so the actual number of days would be on there, and I could ask to have that brought down. But I know that the training component, that what I have been told was 3 days. To your other question, no, I actually did not attend the conference at that time. So
yeah, we'd like to get that, and if we could get copies made, if you could just bring that to one of our pages. I think we could have copies of that if it's not too long.
Okay. When you say 3 days, was every officer required to be here for 3 days?
Madam Chair, members, I would ask Colonel Hamm to answer that. That is my understanding.
And is that exclusive or inclusive of travel time?
That would have been exclusive of travel time. You could, for instance, have an officer who would be coming from a greater distance coming down a day ahead of time.
And leaving a day later?
Potentially. I don't know if that occurred. That would certainly be borne out as we continue to go through the actual individual expense reports on that.
Okay. So that will be something that we will be looking forward to seeing from you, how many officer hours were actually in St. Paul and the expense to us for that.
Were there any other questions for members here?
Mr. Trampet, let me just say, on the grant, do you know if that was agreed to ahead of time or if that was needed later, you know, as it turned out that the conference was short on money to try to reimburse?
Madam Chair, members, the grant agreement would have been something that was being worked on for months prior to the actual conference. If I don't have it in front of me, if I remember correctly, though, it was already being discussed when I started in March of that year, and I believe I signed it in May of that year. So the grant agreement would have been part of those earlier discussions kind of all along the way. And again, I would note that that was for services rendered, and the kinds of things that we have in that grant are related to, you know, room rentals, locations on which island? I'm sorry, Harriet Island. Excuse me. For some of those specific training components that were offered.
So that was just part of the upfront agreement about hosting the conference?
Madam Chair, members, I don't know whether it was part of the upfront agreement or not.
So, again, can you tell me, you said you arrived in March. Who was negotiating on that? Who was, you know, in charge of agreeing to that within your agency?
Madam Chair, members, there would have been a steering committee, you know, as is with any conference of this kind of nature, there would have been a group of individuals, not only from the state, but probably the national organization and MCOA that were the conference planners.
But who in the Department of Natural Resources was in charge of that negotiation with the organization?
Madam Chair, members, I'll ask Colonel Hamm to speak to the specific individuals that were on that team and those relationships.
All right, thank you. Representative Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Assistant Commissioner, are the travel reimbursements and the things like time and transit, is that covered under the bargaining agreement?
Madam Chair, members, that would be correct.
Can you provide us, not right now, but could you get a copy of the bargaining agreement that was enforced with that?
Madam Chair, members, that would be no problem. We can do that.
All right. We are getting copies made of this conference brochure for everyone to look at. All right. Thank you. I think that's all we have for you right now. Appreciate it. And we'll bring Colonel Hamm up next.
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to just stay here.
Oh, that's fine.
We're glad to have you. We're glad to have you stay. I think the issues have focused, Colonel Hamm, around how much training was available for folks at this conference. And we're looking at the brochure, and I did have a chance to see the website, and I think we're getting copies of the brochure made, so you're just going to have to share verbally with members about how much training there was. But on Friday, which was one of the days, I see training from 8 to 11, which would have been 4 hours. Is that right?
Madam Chair and chairs and members, I'm Colonel Mike Hamm, Chief Conservation Officer with the Department of Natural Resources. And specifically to the Friday component, that is correct, Madam Chair. But the training was Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the conservation officers.
I didn't see any training with
Yeah, Thursday.
Well, we have the agenda here. It's called the business agenda. It starts Monday the 16th and goes all the way through Sunday the 22nd. But it looks like the first training session is Thursday at 1500 o'clock. Is that 4 o'clock?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock? Sorry. A little slow there. At 3, from 3 till, for 2.5 hours. That's the only training session I see on Thursday. So, and then on Friday there was some training, and on Saturday there was training.
So, Madam Chair and members, that's correct. The opening ceremonies of the days leading up to the conference was not a mandatory session for conservation officers. That began Thursday morning to bring them in for the training component that was on Thursday. The conference, this was the 26th annual conference that has been held in many states and in provinces up in Canada. And the format is the opening ceremonies is a uniform day in which all conservation officers from all the jurisdictions, all of the states, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the provinces of Canada that attend that conference in uniform, in which we have keynote speakers and guest speakers. So although it's not identified specifically as training, there is a message that is coming across to field-level conservation officers. This conference is mostly of field-level that attend this conference. And so
Let me understand here. Were people required to come on Thursday or not?
Madam Chair, chairs and members, yes, they were.
So they were required to come Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday also?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay.
They were released at the end of the day on Saturday.
So they had 3 days they were required to be here, plus possibility of 2 days of travel to get to and from the conference.
That would be correct, Madam Chair.
Well, and you know, if conservation officers were paid, if they decided to come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, was that cost covered, the lodging, the registration, the salary time, if they wanted to stay for the whole week?
Madam Chair and members, it was not. Now, not as a whole. I think that some of the information that we still have to extrapolate is that very question. But my recollection of it is it's not going to be a large number. Clearly there is conference, pre-conference setup, and so you will see some of that, yes, but not everybody in the state.
Now, Colonel Hamm, now I'm understanding that were you the one that made the decision that all officers should be in St. Paul on a weekend in July?
Madam Chair, yes, I am.
And how does that serve a state when in the summertime Minnesotans are recreating, our natural resources are being heavily used, and there's no one out in the field?
Well, Madam Chair, you bring up a very good point, and it was not an easy decision for me to make, but we do and have had over the course of various years, every year we have mandatory training that all officers have to go through, and typically it's at least twice a year. Rarely do we have everybody doing that at the same time. To that point, I had to weigh exactly what you were talking about, Madam Chair, and what kind of conversation would I have with other law enforcement officers that are out there, like sheriffs and state troopers, for that time period that we would have everybody out of the field. In the 70s and in the 80s and in the early 90s, it was very common. Representative Cornish, he became a conservation officer on July 2nd, 1980. I became a conservation officer on March 16th, 1977. It was very common for us at that time, and it was still the same 201 conservation officers or thereabouts that came to some location for multiple day training, and the whole state came in at once. We did start drifting away from that as a division and as a department in probably the mid-90s, and we try to stay away from that. But this was an opportunity of that just doesn't come by for training opportunities for not only just the presenters that presented on that Thursday, because there's a training component there, but also the interaction We have a wildlife violators compact out there with multiple states. And just the interaction of conservation officers and the contacts that they will make will carry on for the rest of their career. And Madam Chair, that's what I had to weigh.
Of course, the choice of a weekend in the summer versus a weekend in January or during the week in January weighs in my mind when I am thinking about the choice of time.
And to that point, Madam Chair, you are correct. We now are year-round. We're pretty busy out there as conservation officers. You used to be able to see the workload, and there would be a break as you would do seasonal changes or you would do something else. But in the middle of January, we still have trout fishing. We still have a high activity of snowmobiling going on, provided we'd have snow out there. The temperature was in the upper 80s, I think, during this time period, but I do hear you.
But let's get back to the amount of training, because when I add up the hours, and maybe I'm missing something, but when I add up the hours, I get Friday 3.
2.5.
Or how many on Friday?
2.5,
she says. Saturday, there are 3 in the morning, and 1.5 in the afternoon, I guess. And that doesn't get near to the 16 that is required during the year. Now, my addition might be wrong, but we're not close to the 16 requirement per year, are we?
Madam Chair and members, your math is probably very close there, because there would be pieces of this conference that are vital and would not be post-reimbursable credits, but yet still be vital for attendance at the conference, and it happens to be during those training day periods. But like I had also mentioned before, this is not just our only training session, and we do in this particular year, we took our use of force training, the shotgun, the rifle, and the handgun training out to the regions instead of bringing officers into Camp Ripley to do that level of shooting. We brought our instructors out to the various where the officers are out in the field, and that would add to the component of the 16 hours, Madam Chair. Also, it is a 16-hour per year average. The requirement is to have 48 within a three-year time period. It's not to have 16 each year, but to do the math, it averages to 16 each year.
Madam Chair?
Excuse me just a moment. So when you talked about going out in the field for some training, you're not talking about as part of this conference. That's just on additional time?
That's correct, Madam Chair and members.
Go ahead, Mr. Kramka.
Madam Chair, members, not to draw too fine a distinction, but we are talking about, I think, mixing words a little bit, because the training component, there's training and there's employee development. And clearly some of the things that are in the keynote addresses, for instance, at the conference certainly could be construed as employee development. Health of the officer, for instance, on that first day that you talked about, and their families, is certainly something that would go into an employee development type program. Not trying to draw too fine a distinction, but training as a title in this document is about kind of those specific times that were set aside for very specific training activities.
I'm going back to the conference agenda here, and I'm looking at the times, and it looks to me like there were 2.5 hours of training on Thursday, and on Saturday, let me start over. I don't know if I even said the right day. 2.5 hours on Thursday and 3 hours on Friday morning. From 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and then there were a variety of other activities. And then on Saturday, it was 8 to 3:30. So, you know, Well, from 2, I guess there was a break for lunch in the middle or a business meeting, but let's just give it a, say, 8 to 3:30 Saturday, pretty much a lot of the day. So 7.7. So 13 hours total, is that, that sounds about right for the conference?
Well, Madam Chair and members, that you are correct as far as that is labeled specifically training component, but Assistant Commissioner Kramko was also talking about employee development, and when we have the opening ceremonies, when we have the vendor opportunities that are out there, because there were vendors that brought in products that field conservation officers use, and they can, and again, they can interact with not only the vendor but other conservation officers that have used that type of equipment. That would become the employee development component. They were on site, and we were doing something while we were on site.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to run to talk to some students here quick, so this will be my last question before I have to go. Just for full disclosure, I used to run a professional association for 10 years before coming here, and I used to work with a pollution control agency quite a lot, and we actually hosted a national conference in 2005, and some of the PCA staff helped with the organizing committees for recruiting speakers and making sure that we had a good experience for everybody, and there is a value to and some pride in having a national conference in your backyard or an international conference. And you want to put your best foot forward and make sure that some people have the sort of sometimes a once in a career training opportunity to come to these conferences. But I'm just looking at the agenda, and I kind of thought there might be some, you know, speakers from national organizations or something that aren't people you could get a hold of locally for, say, a state conference or anything, and I can only see 2 people, that maybe 3, that aren't either Minnesota conservation officers or from Minnesota. There's somebody from Winnipeg, somebody from Madison, Wisconsin, talking about strontium, and someone from Fish and Wildlife Service talking about timber wolves, which I assume is a Minnesota-related thing. And so, it doesn't sound like as much of an international menu of speaking options either. And when we did our conference, I will just say, for the PCA's defense, they were extremely, extremely stingy.
We like to hear that.
And when it came to the issue of money, they never we never asked them, and they never offered to raise money for other sponsors. They might have said, "Hey, have you talked to so and so?" Because they might be interested. But the association always did the asking, or our private sector board members. There weren't people in state buildings on state time doing that, and that's the one thing that sort of gets under my skin on this. But that was it.
I think that's great. I think that I'm glad Representative Gardner noted that most of the training was actually done by DNR. So when we talk about the specialized, you know, bringing in outsiders, I think there's some issues there. However, I think it's important that we go on to the next issue that Representative Gardner brought up, and that is the sponsorship question. Because on your website that now I understand was paid for by DNR, the website says this: "You may be asking yourself, why cannot we fund this conference out of state of Minnesota funds? Unfortunately, no state agency could fund a conference of this size without help from its business partners. The cost of the conference is in excess of $300,000. Sponsorship from you is critical to the success of this conference." After listing the sponsorship levels, which are in the multiple tens of thousands of dollars, the website says this: "Donations can be sent to Captain Kathy Hamm, DNR Enforcement, at DNR offices." this raises a lot of issues. One is that there is a strong implication that the solicitation is for the benefit of the state, and that's questionable at very best. Another is that the conference will cost in excess of $300,000, and I am looking at what was now paid for the conference by DNR was far more than that. I mean, it seems that that's going to add up to far more than that. So it looks like we have some runaway costs here to boot. But I want to concentrate on what the state law says. And the statute says that an employee shall not use or allow the use of state time, supplies, or state-owned or leased property and equipment for the employee's private interest or for any other other use not in the interest of the state. The conflict statute says that it is deemed to be a conflict of interest to use or attempt to use the employee's official position to secure benefits for an organization with which the employee is associated, which are different from those available to the general public. How can it be said that these solicitations were in the interest of the state?
Madam Chair, members, we're now going into some of those areas that Commissioner Holston talked about earlier on. Those are things that are subject to our ongoing investigations and inquiries. We are not going to be able to probably give you some of those answers today as those are undergoing or ongoing.
Let me ask a question. I know there's other hands. Sorry. We'll get to you in just a moment. It said in the newspaper said that they got some, they used some kind of financial records to estimate the staff salaries involved in this conference at $187,000. Do you agree with that number?
Madam Chair, members, it appears, at least in our first run through the numbers, that those numbers are certainly in the ballpark. I think as we talked the other day, you're not going to see a lot of difference in that number.
Okay, so it looks like, if my math is right, the total state cost for this conference is roughly $383,000 that we put up for this conference.
Again, Madam Chair, at this time I wouldn't dispute those numbers.
We just reviewed the budget documents, and we're looking at $2.6 million in cuts to the Department of Natural Resources that will affect delivery of services to the public because of our budget deficit. So it concerns me that we're talking about large expenditures of money, and we're not clear on what the gain was, if it was really a good use of state dollars. So I think that's something that we really need to get to the bottom of. I know Representative Canoes had her hand up a while ago. You still have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's a little, I guess, going back to what we did before the fundraising, and that the fundraising part, I guess, is the part I have the biggest questions about. But I'm just curious, because you run an organization where there's these people all over the state doing work all over the state often, and I would assume one or two people. And how often do groups or the whole conservation officer group get together and talk about what they're doing and what they're... I mean, I think the training is important, but there also is a value of getting people together to just learn in more informal ways. And I'm wondering how you do that, and if there's... When we talk about normal expenditures on training, also if there's normal expenditures on those sorts of staff development kind of things as well, when we could get those numbers.
Madam Chair and Representative, we over the course of, I think, the last 4 years, have been getting together for a one-day session where it is a late start and an early departure, and it's done at Camp Ripley, and we try to do it with as few overnights as we possibly can do to conduct business and of a business nature, and that also then would let the conservation officers interact. There was a long time period where we never even did that, and we are now a very young organization and feel that to some degree it's important that the blend of officers that we have, that they do get an opportunity to see each other at least once a year. I don't know if we will necessarily continue that on a yearly basis. Certainly we would like to do it every other year.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I understand where you may not be able to get into personnel issues, but I'm trying to figure out, and I think Representative Cornish actually helped out on this a little bit, of the different organizations. So you have the Department of Natural Resources, and you have the division chair making a decision. We have the Conservation Officers Union. We have the Conservation Officers Association at the state level, and the Conservation Officers Association at the national level. And can you just, you know, who are the officers here in the, at the time when these, when this conference occurred, who are the officers of the union, who are the officers of the state association, and were there any Minnesota officers of the national organization? And before you answer that, I just want to say I think it's important that we attract national conferences and conventions to Minnesota. It helps us out in the economy, and it's also important to have people in leadership positions. But we have, appears a web here of involvement, and I just like, if you can't provide that now, to have a flow chart of at least the DNR's hierarchy, or if you can name that chain of command, and then the chain of command in the union, the association, and then the national association.
Madam Chair and Representative, there is no Minnesota conservation officer on the national, on the North American Wildlife Enforcement Officers Association. There is not a Minnesota conservation officer that sits on that board. The president of the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association and then / the union piece that you were saying, it was the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association. That was a component. The president, when the conference was first discussed amongst that president and the board members, in which they came to me to ask about the possibility of this thing, it was a different president than the one that was seating during that July 17th and 18th. And but on the steering committee was the current president of the Conservation Officers Association was sitting on the steering committee, and then somewhere during this process that person got promoted and was outside of that Conservation Officers Association. And then on the steering committee was a district supervisor that is representing the needs of that layer. And then also on the steering committee was Captain Kathy Hamm, who was taking the needs of the managers, which would be our training officers' input and our regional managers and that level. I think I got your...
Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair, if we could, and I understand you have, you know, people are going to serve their terms as president and secretary treasurer or whatever, or chair. Can you get the committee that information?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go back to my earlier question while Colonel Hamm is in front of us here. Did we in 2005, did DNR send anyone to the conference that year with the express purpose of recruiting for our site for 2007?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, we did. The process would have actually started in late 2004 with the opportunity to go to the conference site in Penticton, British Columbia, which is north of Montana, and then not only attend the training, not only start monitoring all of the various levels, because there were also 18 committee chairs, the three steering committee members, but then there were 18 various committees and committee chairs that were out there So not only do the employee development, the training that was there, and then that the document that you have that is in black and white, and I provided a color copy to one of the chairs, is actually the pitch that was made at Penticton by the Conservation Officers Association and Steering Committee members for the NAWEA board to take action at that 2005 conference to award it to come to the state of Minnesota. And 2007 was our 120th anniversary as conservation officers as well.
And, Madam Chair, Colonel, do you break out the cost then of this pitch that we made? And I mean, I know this is an intentional thing to bring it here. We've talked about the reasons and all that, but can you give us an idea of how much did we spend to sell the idea of coming here?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think that's probably in that handout that Chief Financial Officer Anderson had said for what the out-state travel was for. That would have been the state component. I do believe that the Conservation Officers Association had sent conservation officers as well, and if memory serves me right, there were 9 or 10 of them that were up there.
Madam Chair, members, as was asked earlier, there was some more specific breakdowns of those two items that you had asked for, and we will provide that as soon as we can. So,
Colonel Hamm, I had asked Mr. Kramka earlier, and I want to ask you now about the negotiations with the national organization to decide to host this conference. And I certainly understand the benefit of us being a host here in St. Paul to a national conference and to have that opportunity to participate in that networking and, you know, comparing notes with other professionals around the country. There's a lot of value to that in every profession. But the question is, what kind of a deal this was for the state to be co-host? What, you know, were you kind of leading those conversations, and you know, where did it come from, the idea that we would have to pay this grant of $35,000, I think, and did you have any idea how much state cost there would be to participate in this conference ahead of time? Did you know whether, you know, we'd have to, it sounded like from what I read in the newspaper that the conference was not going to be a success unless we chipped in more, and when did that, I mean, can you just talk about those issues, please?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I think that some of those issues are yet to be discovered and fleshed out that comes in the investigation, but to that point, I can share with you that I was not involved in the negotiations of the contract that would bring it to the state of Minnesota, but clearly knew that there was a contract that had existed. Also, I clearly knew that there is an immense amount of work that goes with one of these conferences. I did talk to the chief of Penticton, the chief conservation officer there, but I had talked to other chiefs that I knew down in Indianapolis, down in Texas, in South Dakota, and a couple other places, just to get a better idea, and knew that it would be a lot of employee time. That didn't go into the equation as to the big picture and the numbers that you're talking about right now. When I was looking at it, certainly it is of cost, but I believe that the type of work and the interaction that the officers were doing would be of immense value to them for committee structure. It all has to do with conservation officer type duties, whether those duties are in Minnesota or whether they are in general conservation officer big picture type duties. So I felt that the time that they were spending on that, it was immensely valuable, and also gives them an opportunity to develop a leadership role in working something that is this big. So the second part of your question for the grant, and some of the other costs that were out there. Clearly, the hope was that that there would be a bigger sponsor for this. And actually, there was one nationwide company, it might even be an international company, that was looking at it, and a smaller company that was a Minnesota company that was looking at it. But that kind of conversation happened early in the phases, and there was no need to hit any kind of a panic button. Clearly, if that would have happened, it would have been great. Since that didn't happen, we knew that there would be some combination of assistance that was going to be needed out there in a financial way, and that reimbursement grant was.
So you said, Colonel Hamm, that you weren't part of that agreement to pay a grant to, who did it go to again, to MCOA?
No, Madam Chair, I was part of the grant agreement and signed off and was part of that discussion and that negotiation, yes. I was not part of the contract that was signed between the Conservation Officers Association and the North American Wildlife Enforcement Officers Association to bring the conference to Minnesota. They're two different documents.
So there was an agreement, the contract was signed between two private organizations to bring this conference. Was that contract, did that contract specify that the state would be picking up any costs that were needed to pay for the cost of this conference and this contract?
Madam,
who was obligated under the contract to pay the cost?
Madam Chair, if memory serves me correct, that was not addressed. That's not the type of contract that it is, but that was not addressed to my knowledge.
Well, I guess we need to see this contract, if there was a written contract between those two organizations. But I just don't understand how the state came on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars for this agreement between two private organizations.
Well, Madam Chair and members, again, this was the 26th annual conference. Every time this conference goes into either a province or a state, there is vast amount of work that needs to be done. This year's conference is in Great Falls, Montana, and soon after that it's going to Pennsylvania and it's going to New Brunswick. And so I all of the states that have hosted these things know that it takes a vast amount of resources to get that job done.
Well, there's a question. Number one, you're saying that you thought it was a valuable use of a conservation officer's time to help organize and plan this conference. And obviously there was a cost to the state of that. But so I guess that's one question, and whether that really was a good use of conservation officer's time. And then there's certainly a question about, I agree with you, it was beneficial to have this conference in Minnesota for Minnesota COs to go to. That's a good thing. But the question really is, who should pay for it? And why it's one thing to use staff time, it's another to write a check to this organization of taxpayer money to help pay the cost of a conference. I don't know if other states do that, state agencies. And whether that money should have been appropriated. But then, as I understand it, the national organization made a profit at this conference. That's what the Star Tribune said, that they made a $76,000 profit. So why on earth, if they were profiting, would we be paying to make them a profit? That just doesn't make any sense to me. And who was kind of paying attention to this whole financial arrangement? Was anyone?
Madam Chair, members, again, part of the difficulty here that you put us in is this does cross over into some of those investigative type questions that are ongoing. What I would say is we had a grant agreement for services rendered for $35,500, and that was the check that was given to the MCOA for services provided. Is a contract that we had with them. The registration fees, which you also see here, were registration fees for the conference. In effect, we paid, for ability to attend just like anyone else would. to go to a conference of that nature. That certainly would not be unusual in relation to any of the other professional organizations that I'm familiar with. Midwest Groundwater Association Conference, the National Groundwater Association Conference, you would pay those fees. So to some of those other questions, I think we're going to have to wait and see kind of how that investigative line takes us, and we will continue to provide you with that information as it's available.
Let me just follow up. When you said the Midwest Groundwater Association, mm-hmm. I mean, one of our staff actually went to that yesterday, and it was started in the morning, and it was training all day with lunch and two short coffee breaks, 8 to 5, and that's all it was. So that was pure training. I want to ask you about another question here. I mean, I have two questions. Who made the decision to pay for the website that was obviously, I mean, it's titled, this is the website, for the NAWEOA?
Madam.
Who made the decision that the state would pay to put up this website that is titled this? It doesn't say State of Minnesota, it says this.
Madam Chair, members, again, I'm going to have to respectfully remind you that that would be subject to our ongoing investigation.
Okay. I have one other question, and if other members have questions. Last February, Colonel Hamm, you asked the legislature to appropriate $300,000 for an academy for new conservation officers. And your fact sheet said that level of funding was, and I quote, essential to maintain the current level of qualified officers in the field. And during our hearing on that request, Bob Meyer told us this. He said, Colonel Hamm and his staff have perfected what they feel is the best way to train these officers. We do most of the training in-house up at Camp Ripley. And you told us there would be greater enforcement, particularly, well, you said there would be greater enforcement. So now we are in the position of you are asking us for $300,000 for training, and you would have had it in the budget had you not expended it on this other training, which is supposed to be better at Camp Ripley. Help us out here.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I have the utmost respect of both of the committees that are sit here, and the years of the structure that go into that. I've been a conservation officer. I am in my 32nd year, not always at this position, and not always with the ability to deal with budgets. I can share with you that the funds and the decisions that are made, I would not make decisions over any kind of permanent conservation officer, long-standing decisions at the expense of something else. I am very appreciative of the work that the legislature has done, that the commissioner has done, and that the governor has done to get us into the state of conservation officer complement that we are at. I did not jeopardize that with this conference, and I just wouldn't. Those positions, long-term, long-standing positions, are too important to me. I've seen it over the course of the years where we have had those vacant stations, and it puts the stress on the resource and the stress on the neighboring conservation officers. So to that point, I would just share with you that they weren't traded out, and it just isn't an even trade, Madam Chair.
Sir, could you report to us that you are $160,000 short right now, and we're and you're thinking of budget cutting. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. The Star Tribune reports that you are $160,000 short in your budget right now. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair and members, the $160,000 is the governor's request for the general fund. It was the enforcement division's recommendation of reprioritizing efforts that we do within the division. And that's the $160,000, Madam Chair. Well, at least that is $160,000. I don't know if it's the same figure. When I was talking to the reporter had shared with me that he had a document that said there was two conservation officers and a wetland enforcement officer position that are being held open with the $160,000 that he was talking about. Didn't get to see the document, but I shared with him specifically because as you read, Madam Chair, I was highly involved in that figure, and I shared with the reporter saying, no, that $160,000 proposal has nothing to do with licensed conservation officers or wetland enforcement officers. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have all of our wetland enforcement officer positions filled right now, and an academy of 10. Going on at conservation officers up at Camp Ripley.
Mr.
Senator Hanson, just a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. And it was on this point because Colonel Hamm, you know, just a few weeks ago I asked you that question in the working group. If we look at the last few years, both when Representative Osment was chairing the Finance Division and Representative Wagenius about the need for conservation officers, that there was retirements occurring and that there was training, and what was happening with the cuts, and that we want to make sure that we realize the baby boom is occurring, you know, our folks are retiring, new people coming in. And that's the context difficulty we're having with this, is that we've heard the requests and then we see this expenditure. And even last summer, you mentioned wetlands. You may remember that we had a meeting during the summer after we had transferred in statute money from the Board of Water and Soil Resources to DNR enforcement for wetland flyovers. And there were some reports that that wasn't going to occur because there wasn't enough money. So we had a meeting to discuss that, about that we had provided you money. So if we go in this past 12-month period here, we have requests for more money, we provide more money, and now we're into looking at trimming money, and then we have a large expenditure of dollars. And for us as appropriators and looking at oversight, I think that's a difficult environment to look at because the DNR is asking for more, and here they're spending more on something that we weren't aware this expenditure was going to be going on. So I think Representative Wagenius asked the question, but maybe you want to just elaborate. We had those discussions wanting to make sure that we were getting planes in the air to look at wetland violations. We wanted to get conservation officers to fill the vacancies. We wanted to make sure that we were getting people trained. And we've appropriated money to do that. And then now we're seeing this fairly large expenditure.
Madam Chair and Representative and members, the $250,000 from Bowser that was passed through to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for wetland enforcement work, we did make that happen. We did meet with a couple of the members that are here today to have that discussion. It was never the Division of Enforcement, once the decision was made, that's what we were going to do. I never wavered from that or of that for one second, and I think we had a pretty good plan when we had met with you back in, I can't remember if it was, well, when we had met. And I take that serious. To that point, it's also this committee, both of you that during the last legislative session had created a Mississippi Headwaters, the conservation officer position for up in that Bemidji area. And again, our department, our commissioner, took that very seriously, and we were able to get that position in place and open very close to the July 1 start date of the fiscal year and of the biennium. So I clearly do listen to you, and you're an important part of that, and I clearly understand that you're the policy decision makers.
Members, we need to wrap this up. This is not the last discussion, obviously, we're going to have about this. We have another conference committee meeting in this room that needs to get moving. We wanted to request that the documents that the DNR sent to the Star Tribune, that you also send those to us, and you can send them to the chairs, and we'll make them available to members. And we also wanted to hear very briefly from the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, who is here. So why doesn't he come up while we call on Representative Osmond, unless you had a question for the...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make two things, and one of them you're covering, and that is the value of national conferences. I truly can tell you in my life in the workplace would not have been what it has been without the opportunities for national conferences and their importance. So whatever we do, I hope that we don't, you know, discourage people from being involved in getting more information outside the borders of Minnesota. I've been underneath legislative leaders that have absolutely thought that the only thing a national conference was a junket. And in fact, it's a very valuable educational tool that I personally have had advantage from. And the other is the important information I believe is going to be coming eventually from Mr. Noble, mm-hmm. and the legislative auditor's decisions, and I was hoping we'd get a chance to hear from him and the timeline that he's going to be working on.
Thank you, Representative Osmond. And again, I agree with you. I think national conferences have a great deal of value for professionals, but we also need, you know, we have a responsibility to make sure that it wasn't done at great excessive cost to the taxpayers of Minnesota. That, you know, normally you get economic benefit from a conference coming to your state. You don't have to pay out. So that's what we really need to get to the bottom of.
I'm just encouraging you to separate, you know, so we don't...
Yep. That's a very good point. Good point.
And Madam Chair, just to let you know that the documentation that we provided to the Star Tribune was both printed and an electronic version. And then he came into our office and went through that material, and then only asked for, of the material that he went through, he only asked for certain pieces. We clearly have a lot of that. I mean, we have all that documentation that's sitting there. And I don't know if you want all of that documentation or the documentation that the reporter, specifically what the reporter had walked away with. Just that for clarification, Madam Chair.
I think we're discussing having our staff, our fiscal staff, contact you and figure out what information
you.
We need.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Nobles, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And when I saw the article in the Star Tribune, I felt that the allegations that were raised clearly fell within the responsibility and jurisdiction of the legislative auditor to investigate. So on that day, I notified Commissioner Holston that we were commencing an investigation. We will use all of the authority and tools that we have, as we typically do in these matters, which will include our subpoena power, our authority to take statements under oath. We will do this as expeditiously as we can, but as to the point of timeline, I can't give you an exact timeline. We have several other investigations currently ongoing that we need to complete and a variety of other activities. We will begin it as soon as we can. We'll be as thorough as we need to be. We will pursue the allegations that were in the Star Tribune and any others that arise during the course of our investigation. We do intend to look at issues of where the money came from, how it was used, any potential conflicts of interest. We will seek documents not only from the department, but from all the private organizations that were involved in this conference. One difference, of course, is that we will not be holding any public hearings. We will not release a report or any documents from our investigation until we are done. And during the course of that, all of our work papers will be classified as not public. But at the end of that investigation, unless we classify material, it will all become public and available to you. So we look forward to sorting these allegations and facts out and presenting the results to you as soon as we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? All right.
Thanks to members for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Noble.
Friday and an extra hearing.
Thank you. I think we need to, we will, well, I guess we'll have to adjourn this meeting, and then we'll just take a brief recess while we set up for the second, for the conference committee. The meeting is adjourned.